This mutton was actually born in Czechoslovakia or Switzerland. It was in Switzerland. Yeah. Yeah. So people come, we've got monks from all over the place. And of course, I think many of you know that one of our monks, he was born in Indonesia. Do you know which one that was? That was Venerable Santuti. He's because his mother, you know, Vietnam War, and got on a boat and managed to get to Indonesia where, and she left when she was pregnant. Imagine the courage which you had to be able to do that, being pregnant and getting on a boat and risking your life and everything for safety and peace. And so at the time of a New Year's Eve, it's so easy for people to look and think, oh, there's fires in the East, there is wars in the Middle East, and there are old problems in the Far East, but we don't live in the East. We live in what I tell people when I go to places like Singapore. We live in the Western paradise. Because that was an idea in Mahayana Buddhism, the Western paradise. And this is pretty paradisical here in Western Australia. And we have a beautiful, huge, two sanghas, monks and nuns, beautiful lay community living in peace and harmony together. And there's joining in people volunteering to play music, to entertain you, little games, you know, which I try and organize. But this year I have to admit that it was the monks in Serpentine. They knew I was over in Singapore and Malaysia giving talks and teaching a retreat in Penang. And they sort of offered to come up with some sort of little game show. So thank you to Venerable Bodhidharma and all the other monks at Serpentine for doing all that hard work for me. And thank you also for all coming along and joining in. And this is a nice bit of fun and games which we have, which creates a sense of community. And that sense of community is one of the reasons why people go to parties on a New Year's Eve. So sorry I wasn't here for Christmas, but then I'm not a Christian. But New Year's Eve, everybody celebrates that. So it's wonderful to be here for yet another New Year's Eve party to celebrate. And again, all the wonderful things which we've achieved over the last 12 months. It was this time we've just purchased the land in Albany. So yet another monastery to be in the future, hopefully, if it all works out. But it's wonderful just to see the power and the strength of just how Buddhism can bring people together. We meditate together, which means that people actually grow in their understanding of stillness. We practice the loving kindness, metta, so we are kind to one another. And with that, we have a lot of joy and happiness. I know that sometimes, what was it, that time once when I went to Hong Kong, this was maybe almost 20 years ago when I first went to Hong Kong, and I was staying in this Mahayana temple, and when I gave my stories, and when I gave some of the jokes, which I can't help but tell, that all the time that all the lay people would smile and laugh. And of course, as you know, I laugh at my own jokes. That's the main reason I tell them. And I don't care if you've heard them so many times before. The fact is that I enjoy telling them because they're funny stories and they make me laugh. And when I was laughing, one of those nuns, a very old Mahayana nun, she laughed as well. And she told me afterwards that was the first time in so many years she could laugh as a Buddhist nun. Because in that culture, apparently, the Buddhist nuns were not allowed to laugh. And what a terrible world that would be if you're not allowed to laugh and people criticize you for laughing. I mean, how could you even cope? That must be like almost a psychiatric illness. Not to be able to laugh. I'm sure they laughed inside, but they held it so they couldn't laugh on the outside. And that must have been just so difficult to do that. And to the point where these days, even in when I was in Hong Kong, I told them, look, I've been around a lot. I go to many places and travel around the world and do many different conferences and stuff. And the only people I've ever seen who never laugh are dead people. So because of that, I thought that it's part of our human nature just to be happy. What a wonderful time it is on the New Year's Eve to think of all the stuff we've done in the past. I don't mean all the bad stuff we've done. All the good stuff we've done. I was saying this even just yesterday. Was it yesterday? It was yesterday. Cracky. Time flies, when I gave a big talk in Singapore on Nibbana. So I don't want to repeat that. You can go and look it up on the website over there, the big talk over there. They like that very much. And there's lots of jokes in Nibbana. For me, it's like happy Nibbana. And if it's happy Nibbana, it should be very, very uplifting and enjoyable. And bringing people together, which is one of the, obviously the things which creates happiness in this world. But I also, because I knew there was many business people there, I was telling them that sometimes that when there's any problem or difficulty in the country, in this country, we have royal commissions, we go into finding out why it happened, and sometimes just talking about the tragedies of life, yes, they need to be fixed up, but you know, keeping on thinking and talking and discussing tragedies in life just makes us all depressed. Instead, to think, to talk, to focus on the good things which have been achieved in life. All the wonderful things which have happened in the past 12 months. And when we think of all the positive things which have happened in the last 12 months, of course that gives us great energy. It motivates us. What of this world in the last 12 months? A lot of amazing things have been achieved. And so if you start to think of the good things which have been achieved in the last 12 months, we can start to feel, wow, how many of you have been to Dharamsala in the last month? They've been building these huts now. They're almost finished. That is really close. So we can have more women as fully ordained Buddhist monks. Yay! Is that a good idea? You really think so? I mean, really, really think so? So I expect some of you to ordain. And all these other monasteries which are opening up, and monasteries which are being built. And it's incredible just to see the power of the Dhamma. And obviously this is what I always reflect on when we look at the last 12 months. Look at the beautiful good things which have happened to you and your family. Yeah, there's been some tragedies, but there's always those tragedies happen in life. And all that does, it makes space for new things to happen. When a tree falls down in the forest, then it creates a lot of timber for building, and it also, where it fell, these new things grow up. So this is our nature of our world and of our life. If we just keep on focusing on the things which fall down and die, and we don't focus on the things which come up afterwards as a result of that, we don't see the amazing power of this world to create good things. And sometimes that we keep focusing on the bad stuff. Have you ever noticed, I've noticed this, whatever I'm afraid of sometimes happens. Actually, happens more often than not. And I always think that it's like fear creates the result of what you didn't want it to happen. So instead of being afraid, I'll just forget about fear and just let good stuff happen and be positive. Who knows what might happen? And so when I always think of the positive side of life, which is basically that story of the two bad bricks in the wall, but applied to the future. You know, two bad bricks in the wall where I laid, I'm saying this because no one actually got that question right in the quiz. I always think these stories, you know them so well. But those two bad bricks which I laid, I wanted to destroy the wall because of those two mistakes. I thought I could see two mistakes. And when I actually looked more deeper, actually wasn't me, it was another man who came and said, that's a really beautiful wall, there's 998 beautiful bricks. And when I saw that, the guy was right. and I didn't want to destroy that wall anymore. I saw the goodness in it. And then, of course, when I went off to the Cancer Support Association, which is now Solaris, when I went over there and I told that story, they liked it very much, but even more than that, they made use of it and to tell people over there that if you do have, say, a cancer or you do have something wrong, don't just look for what's wrong. Sometimes that grabs our attention and stops seeing the beautiful things which have happened in the last year. It's as if our mind is always attracted to faults and to things which are wrong. But at that Cancer Support Association, this builder came up, and he came up to me and said, "Oh, bricklayers make mistakes, so of course you're not a real bricklayer, so I expect you to make many more mistakes." But he said, in the building industry, when someone makes a mistake like that, we call it a feature. That's right. And we charge our customers, our clients, another couple of $1,000s for that. Because it's original. It makes it look... I don't know about you, but when I see things, you know, perfect, it's like it's plastic. It's like automatic. When I see real things with a few mistakes in them, I see that people have really tried hard. And this is the best they could possibly do. And it does give it a sense of reality. It is feature. So when people have faults in their body, faults in their speech, faults in their behavior, it just makes me laugh. To celebrate the fact that life is not perfect. And also to be able to see the perfection which is around those one or two bad bricks. And once I see the goodness, the perfection, and all the monks and nuns which I know, and with all of the people I get to care for whenever I go to Singapore or KL or Penang, people always say, "Welcome home, Ajahn Brahm." To the point where I don't know really where I live. Where do I live? I live hopefully in people's hearts. Not in serpentine. I live in the stories in my books. I even actually signed this when I signed a visitor's book. They asked, "Where do you live?" And I say, "In aeroplanes." Because I spend so much time traveling to look after and see people. And at that, this is my character, to tell that story, that joke, when people told me, this, and they said to me in Singapore when I gave a talk just last night, But they said to me, what would happen if you died in one of these plane crashes? And that's what I reminded them again of, what would happen if you died in an aircraft explosion at 36,000 feet, the three benefits of dying at 36,000 feet in the air. Do you remember those three benefits? The first benefit, instant cremation. You know how hard it is to get a cremation organized these days and get all the people on board and get them to actually attend and to get sort of the coffin and get all the ceremonies and find a booking and get a priest or a monk or nun or something to do the service. Oh, it takes so much time and effort and energy. But if you die at 36,000 feet in a big boom aircraft explosion, it's all automatic. You don't have to arrange anything. And even the aircraft companies, they spread the ashes over the area as well, so you don't have to worry about what to do with those. That's the first advantage. And the second benefit is funerals these days, they cost a lot of money. And sometimes people's families, they haven't got that much money. So if it's like done at 36,000 feet, it's not that you don't have to pay for the funeral service. Actually, you get a lot of money out of the aircraft company for insurance and stuff. So for once, your family don't sort of grieve over the fact that they have to lose a lot of money. They actually make something out of your old grandma who dies at 36,000 feet. And lastly, of course, the best benefit. This is called positive thinking. The best benefit of dying at 36,000 feet, you're so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. You're almost just next door. if you believe in heavens and stuff. But anyway, nevertheless, just telling people to just have a positive attitude to whatever happens to you in life, that was a big difference. And telling businesses, why if there's a problem in the business, they all have a big royal commission, or they come together and they try and find out who to sack, and they try and find out how to do things better. Yeah, maybe that has a point to it, but it's so negative thinking about what's wrong. Imagine if we always, when we were very successful, when things were going well in our company, in our business, in our life, in our school, imagine they had a meeting, a royal commission from the Australian government into the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, why it is so successful. In other words, investigate the causes of success, not the causes of failure. You have a wonderful relationship with your partner, or have a wonderful holiday, or weekend, or whatever. Why? Why did it work? Why did you have a lot of happiness and joy? And if we investigate and discover the secrets of happiness, why things work well, then we won't need to have any meetings about failure, because we know how to do things successfully. So that's just looking at life in a different way. You know, that sometimes that's, as a Buddhist monk, that's what I have to do. If you want to sort of hear usual stuff, you just get it on YouTube. Or you get it on the internet or somewhere. But here you try and do things in a little different way. To see things and see different ways that the world works and how human beings can make a huge difference, even not by sacrificing anything, just by thinking positive thoughts and by being positive in their actions and looking into and investigating why things go well in your life. Not taking them for granted, valuing them so much to investigate them and learn from them. Learn from goodness rather than from anything else. So that's one of the reasons why the usual reflections done on a New Year's Eve is reflecting on all the beautiful things we've done, the rotten things which have done, the debts, the mistakes. I'll just leave them. But even those, the debts and the mistakes which happen in life, sometimes those mistakes are just wonderful. Again, one of those other stories which people didn't get. The truckload of dung, the walking through the park and treading on the pile of dog poo. When you tread in the dog poo, what should you do? You should never ever scrape it off your shoes. You must always take it back home with you. Because you only scrape off the dog poo when you get home in your garden and you scrape it off under the mango tree. And then 6 months later, your mangoes will be so many, so sweet, you come and even offer some to me. And I know where those mangoes came from. Especially those juicy ones. The sweet, juicy ones, I know what's happened to them. And when I bite into them, and they're so delicious, I just visualize, oh yeah, that probably came from one of my followers who from the temple one Friday evening or Saturday or Sunday or New Year's Eve walked home and trod in the dog poo, and they took it all the way home and put it under their mango tree, and that's where the mangoes came from. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I always remember what I'm eating. I'm eating dog poo. Transformed into delicious mango. And when you have an idea like that, when that's how you look at life, when that's how you view the big picture of life, then whatever goes wrong, it's not really wrong, it just creates opportunities for growth, for learning, for compassion, for doing something good with life, even the poor parts of life. Oh, I was telling this, I usually only tell this story over when retreats, But because I was giving a retreat over in Penang, that I told the story of the it's a ghost story. Do you want to hear a ghost story? I don't care because I'm going to tell it anyway. I don't think I've ever told this. Oh, damn, told it over here. But anyway, this is the vertical coffin ghost story. Oh, I think some of you haven't heard this. So there's a gentleman who went to the temple one evening, listened to a great talk on meditation, on peace, on good karma, keeping precepts, and he went on a bit long. So he was a bit late, so instead of going home the usual way, he decided to take the shortcut across the cemetery. Now those cemeteries, the lights are always very distant. And there's a reason for that, because ghosts don't need lights to see. So as he was walking, taking the shortcut across the cemetery, his heart was beating boom, 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 boom. But when he got halfway, he was safe, he didn't hear anything, boom, boom, boom. 3/4 of the way, he could actually see the end of the cemetery, the gate. That's when he started hearing something strange. So what did he do? Walked a bit faster. And when he was walking faster, whatever it was he thought was following him also came faster. Bump, bump, bump. When he got to the gate of the cemetery, he made a big mistake. Don't ever do this if ever you have that experience that you're being followed. He looked around, and what he saw made his eyes almost come out of the sockets. His face went white. He was shivering with fear, because what he saw was unbelievable and supernatural. It was a coffin. Bump, bump, bump. Coming after him. A vertical coffin. Bump, bump, bump. Still had some of the soil on it and the cobwebs. Bump, bump, bump. And he just turned around and ran for his life. He ran so fast, but didn't matter how fast he ran. Bump, 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 bump. The coffin was catching up on him. Faster and faster he ran. He was sweating. His heart was pounding. Bump, bump, bump. He got to his garden gate, and he didn't open the gate, he jumped over it. He was that scared. And he got to his front door, and got out his keys from his pocket, and he dropped the keys. And he turned around, he saw the coffin stopping at the garden gate. The coffin couldn't jump. He thought, I'm safe. Bump! Bump! As the coffin started to break down the garden gate. Bump! And the garden gate gave in. And he picked up the first key, which was on the ground, and he put it in the lock. Oh, he was so lucky. It was the right key. He turned the key, opened the door, jumped inside, closed the door, slammed it shut. Just as the coffin came to the front, he could see it through the glass in the front of the front door, the main entrance. But he was inside his house. He was safe now. Bump! As the coffin started to hit the front door of his house. Bump! Bump! As the coffin started to break the strongest door in the whole dwelling. Bump! As the hinges started to give way. Bump! As the lock started to disintegrate, there was only one place he thought he could go. He ran up the stairs to the second story. He went into the bathroom, and as he went into the bathroom, he turned around. Wait for it. Bam! as a coffin broke down the front door of his house. And the coffin came in the house. The coffin looked to the right, the coffin looked to the left, and then the coffin looked up.
Ah.
That's where he saw the man standing at the top of the stairs. So what did the coffin do? Bump, 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 bump. The coffin started to climb the stairs. So he went into the bathroom, slammed the door and put the lock on. Bump! As the coffin at the top of the stairs started to attack the bathroom door. He knew he was in big trouble. That coffin had already broken down the garden gate, now the front door of his house, now climbed the stairs, now was attacking the bathroom door. That's not that strong. Bump! And the bathroom door started to splinter. Bump! Holes appeared in the bathroom door. Bump! The bathroom door was about to give in. Bump! And the bathroom door disintegrated totally. There was no place to hide. No place to run. The coffin was right in front of him. Instinctively, he reached for something on the shelf of his bathroom. It was a bottle of medicine. He threw it at the coffin. And it smashed, the glass smashed on the wooden coffin. And this brown, smelly liquid came out. And the coffin stopped. Just like the pharmacist had promised. This medicine, cough medicine, stops the coughing. That's a terrible joke, I know. I just love telling it. I enjoy it. Cough medicine stops the coughing. Anyway. Sometimes that happiness just creates a lot of people being interested in the meditation even, and in the talks, because we do create difficulties in life, we do have difficulties in life, and some difficulties we didn't create at all, they come to us, we have to deal with them. So how do we deal with them? They're not that bad if you laugh. And you find there's so many things, terrible things happen in life, and if you laugh, smile, see a positive side of it, who knows? Maybe it means you don't get so depressed, so upset, and waste so much good energy which we have in our world. So that's one of the things I'm really, really happy with Dhammaloka Center, Dhammasara, Dhana Grove, all these other, you know what I call them these days? I said this over in Singapore, you know, because Singaporeans understand this, franchises. And what's the other word they use when you start a store somewhere else? Sorry? Not chain. Oh, chains. That's right. Yeah, I start a chain of meditation and teaching places so people can be happy and have an enjoyable time, but also realize that you can have an enjoyable time like this evening without alcohol, without drugs, just good, kind people from so many different places coming together to enjoy good company, volunteers, no money involved, just coming here just to basically celebrate peace, happiness, virtue, goodness in our world. And that is so inspiring. So because of that, we celebrate our new year. And because we celebrate that new year, or the old year and the new year, it's a time we can reflect on the goodness which we have created in the past 12 months. yeah, you have had some difficulties and troubles. Could you come and talk to me about them? But as I mentioned to somebody a long time ago, don't just come to the temple when you have a problem. Come to the temple to get even more inspired as well. And that way, it means that you actually grow in happiness. It's the old, instead of watering the weeds, water the flowers. Develop the good things in life, and they just tend to make the bad things just don't get any oxygen in life. And the good things which we develop, which we cultivate, which we celebrate, which we have fun with, those good things are sometimes just so inspiring for us. Good places accept good places attract good people. And the good people really make it a good place. And so that when we have all that goodness coming together, it becomes a joyful place for people to come to. A happy place where you can spend your New Year's Eve having fun, and people ask you afterwards, where did you go for the New Year? And you said, I went to the Buddhist party. Buddhist party? What is that? What did you do? Well, we listened to music played by by our volunteers, had some nice things to eat, cooked by our volunteers, listened to a stories about vertical coffin, by monk volunteers. And I volunteered to be a monk. I think I do count as a volunteer for the Buddhist Society. You know why? Because I don't get paid. So I'm not an employee. Am I an employee? Or volunteer? I don't know, anyway. So I'll put my hand up as a volunteer, because volunteers are cool. So all of you are very cool as well. The very fact that you've helped out and looked after this Buddhist Society for the last 12 months and made it an even better Buddhist Society than we've had. And I know this because people come along from overseas and they come and see this place, and they want one. Even recently, that there was a couple from Medan in Sumatra and said, when can you build a monastery in Medan, Sumatra, for us? Another franchise, part of my chain. You know, I'd love to if it was easy to do, but anyway, who knows? Wait and see what happens. So what that really does mean, though, is that there's something really wonderful here, something very good and powerful. And that is great to be able to emphasize. And even like Australians who've never had any idea of Buddhist upbringing before, or Buddhist cultures, it's nice to be able to tell people about what we're actually doing. On our New Year's Eve party, listening to a little Dhamma talk about the New Year, a positive attitude towards it. And sometimes people come and they say, you know, that some things about Buddhism we don't like. So what? They say about bowing. Do you know what bowing is all about? And I told them the story. Did I tell this the last Friday I gave a talk here? I don't know. I keep having to ask that because these days I give so many talks, I don't know which talk I gave where. So anyway, this particular story was when I went to go and give a talk at Christ Church Grammar School. I knew the pastor there, the chaplain, is a good friend. And you know, he said, why don't you come and give the morning lecture at the assembly for us? It'd be really good. I said, yeah, sure, I can do that for you. So we made the appointment. I had to turn up at Christ Church Grammar School, you know, in, was it Mosman Park? Is it Mosman Park or Peppermint Grove or somewhere? Anyway, Claremont. Yeah, Claremont, okay. Claremont, around that area. It's not the sort of area which a very poor monk frequents that often. Yes, I do. But anyway, I went in there to give the morning talk. I had to wait outside the school hall or the assembly hall, whatever it was called, with the chaplain and also with the principal, just the three of us. Wait for the boys to settle down. And then once the boys had settled down, we would go in procession with the principal, the pastor, the chaplain, whatever it was called, and myself. And I was going to give the talk. And as we were waiting, the principal told me, he said, in the chapel, or in the main sort of building there, there is a statue of Jesus. And myself and the chaplain will bow to that statue of Jesus, because we're Christians. But you, Ajahn Brahm, you're a Buddhist, so you do not need to bow to the statue of Jesus. And at that point, I decided to exert my rights. I turned to the principal and told him very fiercely, I demand my right to bow to your statue of Jesus. And he looked at me as if, actually I think he looked at the chaplain and said, who have you invited into this place? I thought he's a Buddhist. He doesn't need to. I said, I don't need to, I understand that, but I want to. Because I can see something in that statue which I can respect. Not everything. If I respected everything, then I'd be a Christian. There's much in there which I respect. That's what I'm going to bow to. And I told him, we were still waiting, just like when I bow to the Buddha, any Buddha statue, I always bow to three things. And the first thing I bow to is virtue, goodness, honesty, trust. Anything which comes under that name, virtuous behavior and speech. Because that has been so important to me in my life. Having people I can trust, people I can leave things with, and I know they're such good-hearted people, they would never ever cheat me. So I bow to virtue. Imagine if this place had nobody who would steal or would cheat or would harm you. What a wonderful world that would be. And that's actually the experience living in monasteries. You can trust people. So, I bow to virtue. It's my first bow when I see a Buddha statue. My second bow is to peace. Because peace in all the aspects of my life is so valuable. Obviously, peace in meditation. So you sit down and everything gets so calm and peaceful and joyful and happy. And then in the monastery, people I live with, we're living together in peace, calmness. We don't get angry at one another, at least not when I'm there. I don't know what's been going on in the last couple of weeks while I've been in Penang, in Malaysia and Singapore. But I'm sure I trust the monks that are fine. So, and peace in our Buddhist society, West Australia, peace in the communities, even peace in the world, wherever you can find it. I worship that. I worship peace. And of course, the peace in deep meditation, well, that's something which is supernatural and beautiful and amazing. So anything which is peaceful, I worship. That's why my second bow is to peace. And my third bow is to wisdom and compassion. I put those two things together. Because any wise person would always be kind, compassionate, helpful. And any compassionate person is wise. When I see those acts of kindness, giving someone a lift home because they can't get the taxi, stopping to help people who are stuck, you know, because their car can't work and you can sort of help them. You know, that happened years ago over in Serpentine. When we were doing so much building, we'd get a lot of our timber straight from the timber yard in Jarrahdale. We'd go around the back way, past the prison and Serpentine Dam, then to Jarrahdale to pick up these loads of wood. And one morning we were driving along there, and there was this old couple who had been stuck in the car all night. Their car had had a low battery and they didn't know how to fix it. And that part of the world, that's Kingsby Drive between the prison and the dam, no one uses that road at night time. So this elderly couple had gone out for a nice little drive and got stuck in the middle of nowhere. And they stayed there 5 or 6 hours all night until the dawn came up. And of course, the first car on that road was us, the Buddhist monastery car road. And our car had some jumper leads in it, so we could charge up their battery, so their car could start again. Oh, they were just so happy. That almost, I think, could convert to Buddhism if we were like that. But we're not doing things to get anything out of anybody. We were just doing it because it needed to be done out of compassion and kindness. And they were just so happy that we could help them. And actually, I was so happy that we could do the help. Compassion and kindness, wisdom, create so much joy and happiness in this world. I worship it. And if anybody has the opportunity to do something, an extra bit of cleaning, an extra bit of kindness, making sure that everybody gets a lift home this evening, or can find a way home, please not me, because I'm staying here tonight. Be kind and look after one another, and that creates so much joy and happiness in this world, and so much sense of safety. So when I see that, wow. So when I do my three vows, it's to virtue, peace, and compassion. Now, why do I do them? Because every time I do that vow of virtue, I remember how important virtue is. I remember just how valuable peace is. I remember how beautiful acts and words of compassion are. So that encourages me to be more compassionate, more peaceful, and more virtuous. That's what we vow for. Virtue, peace, and compassion. Sila, Samadhi, Panya, if you want to do it in Pali. But that means it's a powerful practice, and I really get into it. And it's amazing to see how many virtuous people we've created coming through this center. Over how many years is this now? It was 37 years, I think. And anyway, that's close enough, 36, 37, just a year here in 36 doesn't really matter. What a wonderful thing it is we've done. Oh, that gives me so much happiness and joy. And I think of all the great things we've done in all these years, amazing communities we've formed, great work we've achieved, powerful teachings we've developed and practiced, not just for yourself, but for your children, and who knows, probably for your children's children. Incredible thing which we've done. Wow, well done everybody. And don't just look at me. Sometimes people say, oh, it's Ajahn Brahm, because I'm the teacher. It's not just me. I take no responsibility. It's the Dhamma. It's the system. My teachers, people have taught me. I just went past the place where many, many years, it was in Singapore, I went past the place where I gave one of my first really huge talks to about 5,000 or 6,000 people. It's a lot of people. And they all came there, they were all sitting down just waiting for me to turn up to give the talk. There was no B lecturer, no supporting act, just Ajahn Brahm in front of 5,000 or 6,000 listeners. And when I went in there, I thought to myself, this is weird. This is even dangerous. Ajahn Brahm might get big head. I didn't get big head. What I did get was big tummy. But you know what I thought as I walked in there? I thought, this is dangerous, you know, having lots and lots of people coming to your talks. But I also thought, it's not me who's giving the talk. It's actually all my teachers. Everybody who'd advised me, inspired me, taught me, all the books which I've read, all the time I spent with great monks like Ajahn Chah, that was where the talk was coming from. Nothing to do with Ajahn Brahm or Peter Betts, that's my lay name before. Nothing to do with that. This was coming from the Dhamma and all the people who'd influenced me. And so there I gave the talk, and it wasn't coming from me. I never owned the talk or felt proud of it or felt disappointed with it. Just let it come out. And that was obviously a very wonderful talk. And that's how I've performed since. I never talk at you. I'm always talking with you. In other words, listening to you. You may not realize this, but catching an idea of where you're at and how the talk is required, where it needs to go to inspire you, please you, help you, to serve you. And that's how this whole thing works. So that is the talks which we give and how effective it really is. I know that I often talk about not planning things, and of course I don't plan things. It's great that the clock is up there. Sometimes I can't see that clock, that's why we have this clock up here. They never agree, but who cares? Life never is in agreement. That says 11:43, this says 11:41. It's close enough. But what is very important is that not planning things, which means that you can be in this moment, react to this moment, enjoy this moment. It's not just wishing away minutes of your life, hours of your life, or days of your life. Please, this life is very precious, so please be here in every moment you can. Really get into the center of the present moment, right in the middle of now. And enjoy it. It's a very beautiful place to hang out. When I get into my meditation and start being in the present moment, well, I'm not worried how many minutes are left before my plane lands in Perth Airport. I'm not worried of how many minutes we've left before the fireworks go off for the New Year's. Just being in this moment, enjoying everything about being now, that is how we create a beautiful future. This temple here today, it was created by so many moments in the past of people just caring about the beauty, the cleanliness, the virtue, the peace, the kindness in this moment. This is where it's built. And then, this is its result. Beautiful community on a New Year's Eve, another day here, but a special day, 31st of December 2019. It only really feels a moment ago, it was that moment, 1999, New Year's Eve, thinking all the computers would go, will stop working, Y2K, do you remember that? I remember that. I was actually quite hoping all the computers would stop working. But nevertheless, many of my hopes did not come to fruition. But it all worked out okay, because I really knew no matter what happens, there's beautiful people, kind people, serving people. And it's the people which are important, not the things. You are important, not your achievements and failures over the last year. That is the Dharma. That's what I heard from Ajahn Chah. That's what I read in the books by the Buddha. That's what I discussed and learned from all those teachers who inspired me over so many years. That's where this talk comes from, as all the talks come from, not from Ajahn Brahm or from all the teachers. It's a system which works so beautifully. And so this is where we're getting ready for the new year of 2020. The roaring 20s. That was 1920s, wasn't it? But anyway, this is the opportunity for each one of us. And you always know whatever you have to deal with, you can always make amazing things from it. Never feel that you're behind the eight ball, as they say. Never think that you're doomed to some terrible, terrible catastrophe. You, the future, is in your hands. You can make whatever you like of it. So please like something which is worthwhile, beautiful, amazing for so many more sentient beings. Then 2020 will be a fantastic, wonderful year. So, it's now just 15 or so minutes before midnight, so I'm going to invite you all just to sit quietly. I will guide the meditation for about 10 minutes, and then I'll be quiet as we listen to the last moments of 2019 fade away. Before we give the final blessing for you at 2020. 00.00 midnight and the start of a new decade. So, if you'd like to get yourselves nice and comfortable, it's only 15 minutes. So, two of us at midnight. Someone's gave us a party cracker. So we might as well put it at midnight, okay? 2020, okay. Much better than the bell, rung the bell so many times. Okay, so if you'd like to close your eyes. I've got to keep opening my eyes every now and again. Just a short 15 minutes meditation. So bring your awareness into this moment. Now, it's already 2020 in places like Sydney, but this line between previous this year and the next year, that is coming closer and closer to us. So be here so you can really enjoy this. And in this moment, right now, we can do a little visualization, like just the way we imagine. Imagine you've been carrying these two heavy shopping bags. You've been getting supplies for the holidays, and you've been holding those shopping bags for such a long time. They're really heavy. So it makes your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. As you've done before, carrying bags without a trolley, carrying them yourself down long corridors. So imagine that as fully as you can. And now imagine the bag in your left hand. It's so weighty. And like most shopping bags, they carry the name of the store where you bought those goods. And that shopping bag in your left hand has the letters P-A-S-T on the outside. Because you put all those goods from the past. These are your memories. Good memories, bad memories, mostly in between. But you've been carrying them around for such a long time. It makes your heart heavy. It makes your brain, your mind weak. They're tiring. You feel the weight of all those memories in the past shopping bag. And then you imagine another shopping bag in your right hand. And that shopping bag is equally heavy. It's packed with stuff, and you look on the outside of that bag and you see the letters F-U-T-U-R-E. It's a future. And in that bag you cram and stuff so many worries, anxieties, fears, and hopes and dreams as well. These are all your plans and thoughts for your future. And they're so heavy. You've been carrying them around for so long, way too long. So you feel the weight of the past and the future. The past in the bag in your left hand. The future in the bag in your right hand. Weighing you down, tiring you. Stopping you, if you don't mind a simile, of dancing through life. Light, joyful, almost carefree. But anyway, you have these bags so heavy. Now you focus on the bag in your left hand, the past. And you imagine yourself leaning to the left so you can lower the bag in your left hand closer to the ground. And when it meets the ground, when it meets the floor, there is no burden anymore. It's like there's no weight. And that allows you to uncurl the fingers from the handle of that shopping bag and move your hand and your left arm up by your side. So the muscles in your left arm and shoulder and hand can relax and regenerate. They can rest. You put down the bag of the past. And it's safe. No one will take it away. You're just relaxing for a while. And then you imagine the bag in your right hand, the future, equally if not more heavy. And then you lower that to the ground. And when it meets the floor, the weight, the heaviness of all of your plans just disappears in a moment. When it meets the ground. And that allows you to let go with your right hand, to move your right hand and arm away from that shopping bag, which is now well supported by the floor. So your right hand and arm can also relax to the max. You put down the future as well. So that your brain and your mind can really relax. And you imagine yourself standing in this spot between the past and the future. This magic spot called now. What a beautiful place that is. It's a place of peace, of just being here. Not worrying about the past and future. You can see them down on either side of your legs. You can notice them, but you're not going to pick them up. You're going to stay in this present moment for a while. It's a wonderful place of just being. Here. And giving it some kindness and some joy. Later on, when the meditation's over, you can pick up those bags of the past and future. But now we leave them alone. So you can enjoy just being in this moment called now. This is the place where your future is being made. This place will be later known as your past as well. So if you want to make a happy, beautiful past, worth remembering, stay in this moment. Stay here and now. And relax. You can't do anything with this present moment. It's already arrived. Except just to welcome it. Welcome it with a smile, with kindness. I know when people who loved me and cared for me smiled at me and cared for me, then any pain and difficulty tended to disappear. So smiling and caring in this moment makes it a very beautiful and peaceful moment. I'm literally happy to be here. Happy to be in this moment with my body and mind. And I realize I never need to be perfect. Just like the trees in the forest, they can be twisted and bent and broken, but many of them are so beautiful. It's the twisted and old, damaged ones that I like to have my photograph taken under. They've got character. They're not perfect trees, they're beautiful trees. Like this moment. It may not be perfect, but it's beautiful. So see if you can be aware of the beauty of just being now. You've arrived in this moment. Sit down and enjoy it. Welcome this moment. As we become happy to be here, we're creating the best possible state of mind for future health, happiness, even prosperity. The joy of now. You don't have to worry too much. It's only a few more minutes. So I can go right into this moment. A place of rest, recuperation, and deep joy. Being here. How do you feel? What's it like inside? As we relax our body and relax our mind just by being here. I am going to be quiet for the next 2 or 3 minutes until I hear the sounds of 2020. Please be peaceful with me. Stopping in this moment. Just being here. As I look at the clock, it's just turned to midnight. Hear the cheers. Here we're going to give the blessing for 2020. Sabha Buddha Nubhavena Sabha Dhamma Nubhavena Sabha Sangha Nubhavena Buddha Ratanang Dhamma Ratanang Sangha Ratanang Tinang Ratananang Anubhavena Chatura Siddhi Sahasa Dhamma Khandanubhave Na pita kataya nubhave na jinasa vaka nubhave na sabete roga sabete baya sabete antaraya sabete Upadava sabete dunimis Buddha sabbe te avamangala vinasantu ayuvadako dhanavadako siriwadako yasavadako balavadako vanavadako sukhavadako hotu sabada dukha vogabaya veva sukhasa tuchupadava anekantavaya piwina santu chate chasachaya siddhidana labang soti bhagayang sukhang balak siriyayu chavano chabogang vodi chayasavasatavasa chayu chati fasidi bhavantu te. And Happy New Year! I'm very glad to show my compassion by losing and you get the whatever's inside. Happy New Year, everybody! Very good. So now, whenever you wish to go and say Happy New Year to everybody, please now do so. Have a wonderful time. Those who can, just clean up a little bit, great. And I'll see you next time, next place. Great to have you as my friends in the Dhamma. Oops.